podcast. Here we go.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 8 of the AusPuck podcast. I am AP. As always, I'm joined with DCOM. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you for having me once again.
No problem. Thank you for being here. Old man JC is also with us. Hello.
Present and accounted for.
Welcome aboard. And we actually have Sasky Stewart returning to join us again for this episode. Sasky, how are you?
I'm very well, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Not a problem at all. Thank you for being here. To get straight into it, again, we hopefully have some marginally interesting content to get through. Sasky will take us through the recent Women's World Championships. We'll talk about a few of the imports we're expecting to see in the 2011 AIHL season. A quick wrap-up on the NHL trade deadline, and might get to a couple other topics as well, depending on how we go for time. So, as always, we'll begin with talk from, you know, around Australian ice hockey and what's happening. And obviously the biggest and most recent event to occur was the World Championships in Newcastle. Sasky, I know you were pretty involved with everything that happened up there. Can you tell us how the tournament went?
Well, I was involved because obviously I'm involved with the Women's Ice Hockey League, so I went up to see some games on the weekend. But it's the first time the world for women have been here in Australia. The first time in a couple of years the competition is actually being played. So all in all, it was a great success. I think the only thing that could have made it even better was if we had walked away with that gold medal rather than the heartbreaking loss we ended up suffering to the Netherlands in what was the final game of the tournament, which turned out to be the gold medal decider.
Right. Now, I'm not too familiar with women's ice hockey in general. How does Australia go on the world stage? Are we a good team? Are we a bad team?
We are higher ranked than our men's team, but saying that, there is also a smaller number of women's teams that compete.
Right.
But as far as our individual players, we have girls that play in the Western Women's Hockey League. So we have a girl that plays for the Strathmore Rockies. Some of her teammates played on the Canadian Olympic team. We have a girl who plays Canadian college hockey in Calgary. We have girls that play in elite junior programs in America and Canada. So we have quite a high level of individual talent. The big thing is, with last year being an Olympic year, there was no international women's competition because of the size of the women's pool. Before that, because of finance issues, there hadn't been world championships in our D3 category that we play in for a year or two. Actually, I think we might be D2, so I'm just a little bit not quite sure. I can't remember if we're D2 or D3.
We are Division 3.
We are D3. So there's that kind of, there hasn't been a lot of competition for a few years. So it's very much, we're in this category because that's where we were 3 years ago. But I think in the next year or so, or 2 to 3 years, we're going to see ourselves moving up. Right. Because there's been a lot of hard work put in by coaches and the people who run women's hockey here in Australia to really improve the talent pool. There is a very small talent pool for women's hockey here. We've only got about 200 registered female players, and of them maybe 50 to 80 are of that elite women's league level, and beyond that there's still a smaller pool who could be called for the women's team. But when you compare that to some of the other countries competing against, that's still quite a lot of players. A lot of countries, their official IHF numbers are a lot smaller.
Right. So with the expectations of the team, we'll get into the final game, but they came away with the silver. Overall, do you think the team was happy with that? Do you think the Australian women's ice hockey community was happy with that outcome?
I think personally for them, walking away with anything less than a gold medal would be a disappointment to them.
Right.
I think in the future they'll look back with hindsight and realize that they did an amazing job, and the Netherlands was quite possibly, yes, a better team, and maybe that's why they won. Maybe not so forth, but they stuck it. They stuck with the Netherlands team for that game and all that, which we'll discuss. But I think playing any world championships at home, making it to the final game and not walking away with that medal because of one goal is something that will always be counted as a disappointment to these girls that came in with the mindset that nothing less than a gold was acceptable.
Right. But at least it was, but at least it wasn't, you know, a blowout. And that's something to take away from the game too, that they were able to match, you know, a European country, obviously with, you know, endless amount of resources, coming down to a penalty shootout. That's a pretty good feat. I mean, everyone wants the gold. Every team in that tournament wants the gold. But you taking away from that game to match up to those other women, you know, it's not so bad. You know, coming within, you know, a goal in a shootout, you know, you got to take something away from that, right?
There is actually no final series at a world. It's only a round robin, and then it's done on a points basis to award the medals because of the size of the tournament at that level. They actually played the Netherlands. The game they lost 5-3 was an exhibition warm-up game. So they did lose 5-3 to them maybe a week, if that, earlier. I think from what you were saying about how to come that close and to compete so well and lose, there's something you can take away from that. Yes, there is. But I think as a player, from their perspective, and I talk to a lot of the girls after the game, you know, they are teammates and friends for quite a long time. A lot of what I think gets to them is that they did come that close. If they had lost, you know, 6-2 or 6-3, they would have been able to know that they were beaten by a better opponent.
Mm.
But in this instance, when you lose by an OT goal, it's very hard. Like, losing in any situation is hard enough. But I think it could be harder in this situation because they lost by that one shootout. And the thing I think that also makes it hurt even more, and I Shona Green was the third shoot. I might have to phrase this story with how the shootout went down. Obviously, we've got a 1-1 game. We've gone to shootout, or it might have been 2-2. We've gone to shootout. The Netherlands have scored. It comes to the final shooter for Australia who has to score. Now, it comes down to Shona Green, who is a great hockey player. She captains the Melbourne Ice women's team, has just led them to the women's championship now. But the Netherlands goalie ended up, I believe, being the player of the tournament. Claudio is an amazing player who has actually played in the Dutch men's league. Shona's come in for this goal. She's come in. She's drawn the goalie out. She has the goalie diving the wrong way. She has a wide open net. She's just slid it across the ice. It's clinked the side of the post, and instead of going into the goal flat on the ice, it's diverted out of the goal and across the ice. And so every fan in that building thought that puck was going in because there was a wide open net and it hit the side of the net and deflected. And I've never heard the noise go out of a building so fast. People were already on their feet cheering the goal when they realized that it hadn't gone in. And I think that's what has made it a lot more painful for these girls is because they literally came half a goalpost away from it not ending like this.
Mm. Wow, I'm sitting here in I've got like tingles.
Goosebumps.
Yeah, goosebumps.
Chills.
I was calling the game. I with Pete Lambert, who calls the Newcastle North Stars game, were doing the radio broadcast so that both Netherlands and people that weren't in Newcastle could listen. And I actually had trouble continuing on. It was so heartbreaking to watch not only such good friends, but such good hockey players be so devastated they were. Shona Green literally spun around and collapsed to the ice in just utter devastation because she felt, I'm sure, like she had just cost her country a gold medal at home. Like the Netherlands team were pouring off the bench towards their goalie and having to divert around Schoner to get to her. So there's Schoner is on her hands and knees in the middle of the ice and they've diverted around her to get to the goal. And the team eventually came out and got her and made sure they all got to the line and everything. Just the look of both there on the ice and afterwards of just how rough it was on these girls because it was because of how hard, obviously they've worked so hard and they've sacrificed so much and to come within one goalpost. I mean, but to have it happen like that was one of the most...
Yeah.
It's one of the most painful things I've witnessed, you know?
Well, you know, you look at Gordon Bombay, he missed a pretty big shootout and had a pretty good career afterwards, so Mighty Ducks.
Gordon Bombay? Didn't he blow out his knee and end up back coaching the Mighty Ducks?
Sorry, I'm just trying to lighten the tension.
No, I think it's a good reference.
Yeah, well, that's all I can think of right now, poor little Gordon missing the shootout. Wait.
Gordon was the coach. Are we thinking Charlie here, or are we reminiscing to flashbacks from the movie that I don't remember?
No, right at the start, Gordon Bombay. You know, that's why he
got the... We're not going to get into the Mighty Ducks.
Well, you know, it might be the first hockey reference from an Auspuck podcast that most of our listeners actually know.
I think if you're listening to Auspuck, you probably have a fair bit of an idea about the game beyond Mighty Ducks.
Well, Mighty Ducks is the one movie I don't really... I don't think I've watched in probably like 8 years or 9 years.
Well, I would hope our listeners, you know, would have some sort of understanding of what Auspuck is all about, especially if they're tuning into our podcasts.
Thanks for that recap, Sasky. I got some team stats here, and there's obviously a couple of players that deserve to be mentioned. Looks like they had fairly good tournaments. Natasha
Farrier.
Yeah, Farrier. 11 points in 5 games. Obviously, obviously the offensive force for the Australian team.
Well, yeah, Natasha was obviously the leading scorer on the team. I think she might have been the leading scorer of the tournament and was also recognised as the tournament's top forward. Tash is an amazing player to watch. She's not much taller than me, so I think she comes in at about 5'1" at the most. And she's most affectionately described as kind of a mix between a pit bull and a terrier. She's an amazingly fast, aggressive hockey player. She plays at Mount Royal College in Canada at the moment. She's on exchange, but she's been the leading scorer for the Adelaide Assassins for I think 2 or 3 years and is clearly one of the most talented players that we have. The skill set on her is quite incredible. She's got amazing hands and amazing accuracy. Like, on talent alone, quite a few of these girls have as good skill sets as the guys in the AIHL without a doubt. And wow. She's one of them.
Wow. Yeah, and just to be cool. All right, we can argue about that later. But just to confirm your point, Natasha is listed at 5'1", second smallest girl on the team. She finished third in tournament scoring. She just missed out. Some silly Hungarian had 13 points, and then
That Hungarian girl was incredible. I think she's the Hungarian girl. Like, it's amazing to go to a tournament and see all these different countries and their players. The Hungarian girl, I'm not even going to try and remember what her last name was because it's a mouthful, I'm pretty sure.
Kasparic.
I think which one was it?
It's Kasparic. Her first name is Fanny.
Yeah. Well, I think she's about 16 or 17,
mm-hmm.
And she was just incredible to watch play. Some of the skill sets on some of the European players, their skating is just, it's a thing to behold.
Well, yeah. Well, well done. Well done to those scoring leaders. But Natasha was the only Australian in the top 15. So obviously, well done to her, and she's obviously done her country proud. And the future for women's ice hockey in Australia is bright.
Future for women's ice hockey in Australia is very bright. I mean, we've had 5 or 6 years of the Women's Ice Hockey League now, and we're starting to see that paying off in international success and international performances that are growing and increasing, I guess, every year.
All right, welcome to Import Watch, where we'll preview the imports you can expect to see in the 2011 AIHL season. We'll quickly run through a few of the teams and the imports that they already signed for the year, give you a bit of background on those players, and hopefully we'll allow you to relate to them a little bit more, and you can become even bigger fans of them than you would be during the season. Let's start with you, DCOM, and the Sydney Bears.
Okay, yeah, so basically, officially, I think the Bears have two signings that have happened in the past, actually, a couple of weeks, very close to each other, and they're still working on two more. The first one I'm going to go with is a young, real young guy. He's only about 20, 21 years old this year, but he's about 6'4", weighs about 270 pounds, and he's a forward. Basically, he played in the for the Brandon Wheat Kings for about 3 years there. And I think his main role was to be a bit of an enforcer, a bit of a fighter. I mean, he racked up some, you know, pretty okay penalty minutes. And, you know, his presence out there is obviously his body, and he's obviously got a big physical presence out there. He's not too much of a scorer. I would say because he plays on, obviously, he plays on the same team as Braden Shen, which is Luke Shen's little brother there. Was drafted by the LA Kings, I think it was. Am I right there?
Yep, yes. LA Kings.
Okay, so, yeah. Before you go on, what was the name of this import?
The guy's name is Jordan Hale. Import's name is Jordan Hale.
Yep.
And he currently plays in the AJHL, which is the Alberta Provincial Junior Hockey League. Even though he played in the WHL and he was used as a fighter, he's now in the, you know, a top junior A, elite junior A league, but he's scoring like, you know, 41 points in 55 games, which isn't so bad when he's supposed to be, you know, a big enforcer. So I think the Bears have got a pretty good pickup there. Finally, we've got a little bit of grit added towards, you know, the Bears roster. The Bears never had that in the past, okay? The Bears aren't really a physical presence team. They don't have any whiteys. They don't have any, yeah. You know...
no sandpaper.
That's right. That's right. There's no bump and grind. It's all about...
It's all finesse.
Yeah, it's all hero. So, yeah. And the second I'm going to go with is they've officially signed Curtis Dull. He's basically... he's an older guy. He's about in his 30s. However, he plays in an elite league. He plays, in fact, right now for the elite English National League, which is the elite hockey league. For the Hull Stingrays. He's a defenseman. He's about 6 foot, 5'11", 6 foot. Big defensive, I guess, force. He's got a lot of pro experience playing in the CHL for a number of years. Played in the ECHL for the Victoria Salmon Kings. So there's two imports there that, you know, have a lot of professional experience coming onto a team that may not be as deep as they were in the past. I mean, a lot of the older guys or the core guys probably aren't coming back this year. So those two guys, even though Jordan is quite young, is probably going to add a lot of experience, a lot of professionalism to the team. I mean, there's probably one more guy that I could add, and he is a French guy who has been living in Australia for about 10-12 years now, and he's got his residency. But, you know, he played in Magnus Liga, which is the top French league over there. And you know, guys of Curtis Dull's you know, professionalism would have played over there as well. I mean, I'm not saying that he would have or he did, but I'm just saying that those type of guys, you know, from Canada and the US would, you know, have gone over there and gotten paid to play as imports as well. So,
yep.
You know, so there's three guys there that are they're going to be a big, you know, a big presence on the Bears team, and they've still got maybe two more imports to sign that, you know, are quite unsure. So, that's about it.
Yeah, so something for Bears fans to look forward to in the future and something for them to get excited about right now.
Definitely.
Looks like. All right, and JC, with the Adelaide adrenaline, what can you...
I looked quickly into this, and all I could find that was that they've re-signed Mike Werner, but I hear there's something else in the pipeline.
So Adelaide have signed a few guys in the... our past couple of weeks. They've signed two brothers out of England, the Phillipses. I don't know an awful lot about Kevin and his background, but Dave, who kind of grew up in the Hull Stingray system, played a bit for the Belfast Giants, but has spent the last probably 2 years bouncing between AHL and ECHL teams. So he's been in the... Chicago, Colorado kind of systems for the last year or so. He's not really affiliated with any of the NHL teams, but he's been up and down between Rockford and Toledo, and this year between Lake Erie and Toledo. So he's kind of in that little system there. So he looks to be, you know, a pretty good player. He's a defenseman, so we're not looking a great scorer here, but great, solid defenseman. They also just signed another guy by the name of Sean Scarborough, who played for the Canberra Knights last year. So he played for the Knights last year. He played for San Jose State before that. And now he's going to play for the Adrenaline this year.
So Adelaide...
Well, I don't mean to jump in, but just one more thing on that Dave Phillips. When I was over there in England a couple of years ago, he was actually supposed to be, you know, one of the young guns, one of the top prospects for English hockey, basically. And for him to have cracked the AHL was a big deal when I was over there. So, you know, for him to come over to this league, it's quite interesting because he's gone from, you know, a big top prospect making, you know, AHL camps and being affiliated with, you know, those kind of leagues. And then coming over to grace our league, it's quite good. And he's such a young guy too. So,
And if you want, you can follow him on Twitter. He's quite active on Twitter. If you feel that, you know, let him know about our league and what he can expect when he rocks up down here, you can find him on there. I think he's at Dave Phillips 13.
So you're saying, Espo, that Australia as a whole has done a pretty good job of recruiting this guy?
Look, I have to say something here. Being a part of the emailing system that goes on with all the import emails that I get for the Bears team, it's amazing the different types of imports that inquire about our league. You've got guys that are just amazing players that are going to want money. They're going to want, you know, stipends or something. They're going to want something to be able to come over here. And then there's guys that are just, you know, breaking Junior C or whatever, you know, from in Canada. But to be honest with you, you know, I think we've got the best league, obviously, in the off season than the world has to offer. And that's not just because we're in the Southern Hemisphere and now seasons are opposite. I think that, you know, word has traveled and traveled fast. And the better and better and better that our imports get are evident through our signage. This Dave Phillips guy, obviously, like, you know, Saski said, he's an AHL player, he's an ECHL player now. I mean, all these type of guys who want to come and play in our league, you know, I'm sure they want to see Australia, but I'm sure that they know the league is obviously worthy of, you know, their hockey, their talents.
Yep. So, yeah, definitely a credit to the AIHL.
Definitely.
Era, that one. All right, just moving on from that, onto the Brisbane Blue Tongues, which I'll talk about. They've got two signings so far that I will let the Australian ice hockey community know about. Adam Gehrig, who is a 22-year-old forward, has agreed to terms for the 2011 season. Now, he spent 2 years previously in he spent the 05, 06 and the 06, 07 seasons in the WHL for the Saskatoon Blades. played 26 games in 05, 06 and had one assist with 29 penalty minutes. So I was looking for an improvement on the numbers on the next year, but in the 06, 07 season, he played 50 games and only scored one goal and no assists for 1 point. So obviously that's a pretty tough league, and it's good for him just to even spend 2 years there. But 2 points in 76 career WHL games. I'm not sure what kind of production Brisbane's going to expect from him, but certainly more than talented enough to play in the AIHL. So be interesting to see what kind of numbers he puts up. I believe Adam was born here but grew up in Canada, but is still technically going to be classed as an import. The only other official signing for the Blue Tongues was Alex Boyd, who is a returning import. For our listeners that don't know who he is, he spent the 07-08 season in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, and in 07-08 put up 7 points in 45 games, and in 08-09 put up 8 points in 29 games. It was interesting when so the Blue Tongues are obviously happy to have him back. I think, you know, he's someone they build around. Only played 11 games for them last season. Scored 5 goals, 3 assists for 8 points. The Blue Tongues media release was quite adamant that it was just shy of a point a game performance, 8 points in 11 games, which I think is a bit of a stretch, but hey, you know, at least that's a little bit of a contribution to the team.
No, Alex is one of the guys that the Blue Tongues, I think, are pretty lucky to get, because he's, I guess, an import player and that he's played in Canada, but he's actually an Australian citizen, so he doesn't count as an import. So they're pretty lucky on that front.
All right, and moving on to the Western Sydney Ice Dogs, only got one signing to point out at this stage. They're bringing back a player from who they've actually had for the last 2 years, Matthew Monaghan. Scored 15 goals, 5 assists for 20 points in 20 games last year. Obviously a pretty good contributor to that team. He's 6'3", plays on the edge, so he's obviously everything that the Dogs want in a player. I did like what Mark Stevenson said about the signing, was that he was economic with his penalty minutes. And I'm thinking, when you have 5 guys on your roster that each recorded over 100 penalty minutes, that's just in the 2010 season alone. I think it's pretty refreshing to see a 15-goal scorer in your team only put up 14. So maybe the Ice are, the Ice Dogs are going to go with some skill this year. we'll see what happens. But a pretty big fan favorite. The reaction around the Ice Dogs community was they were pretty happy to have him back. So they look forward to big things for him in the 2011 season as well. All right, so that's it for Future Watch. In the next episode, we'll cover the two Melbourne teams, Newcastle and Canberra, and stay tuned for that. All right, so the biggest news from around the NHL recently has been obviously the trade deadline that passed on February 28th. I guess we're going to talk a little bit about the trades that we thought stood out from, I guess, maybe the trade deadline day and all the weeks of February, because there were some big ones. Let's start with you, Sasky. What was your highlight trade, or what did you think was good or bad?
Good trade. I'm going to have to go with the Jason Arnott to Washington deal. I think that's exactly the kind of deal Washington need to make. I was a big Dave Steckel fan, but he's a great face-off guy, but he's a fourth liner, really, and Washington gave up him in a second rounder next year to get a solid second line center with veteran leadership who's won a cup before, and that's exactly what they need if they want to go anywhere either the rest of this regular season and into the playoffs, because it's something they haven't really had. They've picked up him. They've picked up Knubel. They look really quite good for the ride out towards the playoffs.
Yeah, Dennis Weidman as well. Good addition.
Yeah, Dennis Weidman from Florida, I think it was, that they got him from. That's a great deal. He's been a real solid defenseman through Florida, through Boston, right back out to when he was in St. Louis. And he's just one of those guys that seems to be getting, you know, he's never going to be a superstar defenseman. He's not Mike Green, which could be a good thing. But he's going to be an excellent, solid defenseman for them. And they look like they've got a great decor going into the playoffs. But trades that I guess would be my loser trades for the deadline would probably be either Atlanta giving up, I think it was Nicholas Bergfors, and obviously they threw in Patrick Rismiller, who I wasn't actually aware was still in the NHL. I think he might be in the AHL. For Dvorak, sorry, I say it like the composer, and a fifth-round draft pick. Bergfors had a great rookie season last year, and this year he hasn't been as good. He's had a bit of a sophomore slump. He's been coasting, like, hasn't been really playing how he could, hasn't been going to the corners, doing a lot of that stuff. But to give up a young second-year forward with so much potential for a vet who you might get one, if you're lucky, 2 years out of, and a fifth-rounder, I think it was a really bad, bad move by Atlanta and could look like being Braden Coburn version 2. And I think they gave him up for Alexei Zitnik.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was a good move by Atlanta there. And the other one that I kind of put a giant what were you thinking circle around was not actually at the deadline, it was the week earlier, and in that kind of flurry where the whole NHL got the date of the trade deadline mixed and traded something like 10 or 12 players overnight. This deal actually went down at, I think, maybe 2 a.m. in the morning. It was about 6 or 7 p.m. here when it came through. And that was the Eric Johnson and Jay McClement for Kevin Shattenkirk and Chris Stewart. This deal made no sense to me.
You're talking about the Colorado Avalanche and the St. Louis Blues trading?
Yep. There. The Avs and the Blues swapping, you know, young defensemen and forwards. I mean, at the moment, it's one of those trades where you're like, it could go either way. You know, it could be amazingly good for Colorado if Eric Johnson turns out to just keep growing and growing. But it could turn out to be even better for St. Louis. Chris Stewart is an excellent power forward. He's had some injury trouble this year. And Kevin Shattenkirk is just going to grow and grow. So it's just it's a trade that it doesn't make sense to me. And it's not something I didn't see as a necessary for either team. So it's not a good trade in my opinion there.
Yeah, I think that trade's got the potential to be really, really ugly for Colorado. I mean, Chris Stewart led the NHL in goals in the 2010 calendar year, if that makes any sense. Kevin Shattenkirk's obviously nothing to frown upon. He's a really good prospect. And I think those two guys, they're NHL ready players and can step in and make the St. Louis Blues a lot better. And if Eric Johnson doesn't live up to being the hype of a first overall draft pick, then I think that potentially could be really bad for Colorado.
Do you ever wonder if St. Louis looks back at that draft class and looks at who else they could have got in that year? And just think, I think the second overall pick that year was Jordan Staal, and the third overall pick was Jonathan Tate.
Jonathan Tate.
You look back at that and just try and imagine the face of Pittsburgh if they'd taken Taves over Staal. You look at St. Louis and just think how different it could have been if they hadn't picked Eric Johnson. It's very rare you see a first overall pick shifted, and it's been a long time. I mean, okay, obviously excluding, I think, maybe the Kovalchuk deal. It's been a long time since you've really seen a first rounder shift it.
Yeah.
A first overall, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that 2006 draft's interesting because I think Staal being chosen by Pittsburgh was obviously they won the cup, you know, with him in the lineup, but I think that was a bad move. You know, could you imagine Crosby and Taves on the same line? That would be amazing.
But I think in that situation, you've also got to look at, you have Crosby and you have Malkin. you don't need a Taves. You need a Stahl more in that situation, I think, to level out your team consistently. You can't afford to keep a Taves for a long term if you've also got a Crosby and a Malkin.
Yeah, but that's for a totally different...
And Taves wouldn't be Taves. He wouldn't have the same opportunity anyway. But that is for another time.
That's right. So moving on to you, Decom. What was your highlight of the deadline?
Well, unfortunately, as you both all three know, that this year's, I guess, trades weren't as interesting as last year's or the previous year's. I'm going to have to go with my girlfriend team's trade for Dustin Penner going over to the LA Kings for Colton Tubay. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Tubay.
Colton Tubert.
Well, basically, what's happened there is I think that the LA Kings is you know, after a big, powerful forward, powerful winger, they can rack up some sort of points or get them to some place. Well, they just needed something, I guess, to put on the wing of another big forward, that's Andre Kopitar. So I think they're trying to level out that kind of line to give Andre some support or some, I guess, some size on that same line, if I'm incorrect, please jump in there. But basically, you know, I think it was it's a win-win situation for LA. They got a big power forward, you know, maybe not, a big point scorer, but he's a big presence, and obviously he can score. And I think Edmonton is looking more towards a defensive future. As you know, Colton's quite young, and he's I don't think he's not really cracked the NHL. He's still in the AHL, right? So
that's right.
So I think they're looking for a franchise player, and
well, are you happy or sad to see Penner go?
I'm sad to see Penner go from Edmonton. Obviously he's, like I just said, he's a big presence there. You know, he's a big boy. So, but good luck LA. I mean, they're still obviously in contention for a playoff spot. He can make a difference.
It's funny the offer sheet that Edmonton put down to get Penner from Anaheim, and here we are two and a bit years later, and they're just trading him away.
That's right.
So time goes on, I suppose. JC, any trades you want to highlight?
I only want to wind you up a little bit and make you talk about Versteeg.
I'm happy with the Versteeg trade, actually.
Are you really?
I am. I don't think I think he was traded at a premium. I think a first and third round picks for someone of Versteeg's value is pretty good. I think Brian Burke sold high, and really had teams pitching against each other to get Versteeg, and I think he got a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I guess, but you pick a good player against a pick, and you don't know what you're going to get really. Like, I know there's a lot of talent out there, but I don't know. I would probably stick to what you know.
Yeah, I think I think Versteeg will be out of the NHL in about 3 or 4 years anyway. He's got back problems, so he'll be gone. So, but he's.
Well, aren't you a charming fan?
He's shit anyway.
now that he's gone, boo.
He's a funny bastard, though.
Especially now that he's a Flyer. Man, I got. Yeah, he spells his name with a K anyway, so he's an idiot.
Isn't he Dutch?
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah, so JC, you're not getting me riled up. I've had a month to deal with that trade, so I was happy. Toronto's still winning, so don't let the door hit you on the way out.
That's good. The only other one I was going to say is obviously Pittsburgh signing. What's his name? I've written down here somewhere. But yeah, they picked up another forward, Kovalev. Just trying to sort of bolster now that everyone seems to be getting injured all at once. It's pretty good. So,
and that's exactly the way to fix your injury problems. Pick up an enigmatic Russian winger or center with an injury problem himself.
Yeah.
But he is a hometown favorite of Pittsburgh. They still like him there.
Pittsburgh, if they like you, you're good for life, I reckon.
Yeah, he's scored a shootout winner in his return, so maybe he can be a little bit less enigmatic in the stretch. All right, and my highlight of the deadline was the Vancouver Canucks. I think they picked up Chris Higgins for a spare parts from Florida, and they picked up Maxime Lapierre from Anaheim for, I guess, more spare parts, a couple picks, and I think it was a swap of minor league players. I think the top six, top nine forwards of Vancouver are pretty much set. Adding some speed and some grit to their fourth line was a good move. Boy, are they going to be, an entertaining team to watch and a real pain in the ass to play against. I think if you have to go up guys like Lapierre and Alex Burrows every night, especially over seven games, I think you're going to get worn out because they're pretty physical, but you're also going to get pretty frustrated because they're really good agitators. So I think that was a fairly good move, I think.
I'd love to see another Chicago-Vancouver series this year and to see, the bloodbath version 3 that would occur from something like that.
Yeah.
Particularly the addition of those guys.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see, finally, Chicago get blown out by Vancouver. Prediction?
Wishful thinking, possibly, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's all I've got to work with. So, all in all, I think 16 trades were made on the deadline day, and I don't know, there was probably about 35 or 30 or something like that through all of February. So pretty good, kept everyone interested over the trade deadline month of February.
This has got nothing to do with the trade, but what about the measly attempt of Forsberg coming back to try to play and crack the NHL again?
Oh, this would be if I was a Colorado Avalanche fan, which I am. Then again, I am a fan of most of the league. I would have been extremely frustrated. We see Forsberg come in, play two road games. The building sold out for a Saturday night game. I actually have a friend who flew from Washington, D.C. to Colorado so she could see Forsberg play on that Saturday game. You know, she was in midair, lands in Colorado, finds out that he's retired. So she's just flown cross-country to get to see Forsberg play because she had missed him when she was younger. She gets there to find out he's retired. It's not going to happen. All those fans, and this was right in the middle, right at the start of quite a rough patch for the Avs. I think it might have been right at the even towards the middle of that horrid stretch where they've gone. I think they've gone something like 15 games with one win, and it just added to a whole nother drama that the Avs hadn't needed at the moment with their struggles with their team and their fan base.
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna retire, and you're maybe thinking of coming back, but you're not quite sure, just don't. If you're that kind of player, because he was such an electrifying player when I was growing up, and I loved watching him play. And then when he retired or semi-retired, as it may seem, with his with his foot problem or whatever happened, just stay out. Just stay out of the league. Don't give anyone hope because, he's one of those players that when I heard about coming back, I'm like, yes! Forsberg, another dinosaur from my era who was coming back to play, maybe got a few seasons left. But no.
I think for many of them.
Gives two shots, two games, and goes, you know what? I'm really not ready for this at all.
the stat line.
Sorry, guys. I'm pulling the pin.
The stat line on Forsberg is fantastic. Two games played, 34 minutes. What am I doing? I'm already a millionaire.
I'll just start a clothing company, a fashion design.
Who the hell talked me into this shit?
I'll just appear in some more bad Swedish commercials.
I'm sacking my
You know who I felt? You know who I felt the worst for in all of that was Matt Duchene, the young forward there. This kid grew up idolizing Sakic and Forsberg. He never got the chance to play with Sakic. Sakic left as he came in. Here he is. He gets the chance to play with Forsberg. There's a couple of great quotes about him about being, you know, Forsberg's in the locker next to him. He's on a line with him. He couldn't believe he was getting the chance to play with Peter Forsberg. So he's always going to be able to say he's played with Peter Forsberg because he had those two games. But if you're Matt Duchene and Peter Forsberg played two games on your line and then decided, no, he was going to retire, you'd feel a little bit bad about yourself.
Yeah. I hate these kids. All right, thanks, listeners, for tuning in to the 8th episode of the Ozpuck podcast. Hopefully, again, we've covered off some things. JC, any final words?
Apologies for not saying more, but yeah, you guys had it all wrapped up, I think.
Well, your role is the quiet third guy, so
yeah,
you play that well.
Witty banter.
Yeah. Sasuke, thanks.
Dashing good look.
Sasuke, thanks for being on board here again. Any final words for the listeners?
Well, in response to JC's, you know, not talking that much, apologies for talking too much, and thank you for not reminding me that it doesn't happen to be my podcast or show. So thanks for having me back again. I always enjoy it.
That's right. You are welcome anytime. DCOM, as always, any final words?
No, just basically, you know, thanks for having me once again. 8 podcasts. We're going to have to start paying for this kind of stuff, do we?
Yes.
Well, thank God I don't. It doesn't come out of my pocket. So, thanks for having me once again, and yeah.
No worries. All right, and just for all of our Ozpuck fans out there, as you may have noticed, we did take most of February off just to give us a bit of R&R and concentrate on some other things in our lives. But we are back. We're geared up. We're ready for the 2011 season. Everything that you heard in Podcast 7 is still going to plan. So hopefully, again, we'll have some more updates for you as you know, March moves on and we move closer to April and the drop of the puck on the 2011 season. You'll hear from us soon, as always, and look after yourselves, and thanks for listening. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
See you later.